Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Songwriters on Process podcast. My name is Benno Papari, and since 2010, I've run the Songwriters on Process website, where you can find more than 200 conversations with songwriters about the creative process. I'm not here to talk about tour stories, band drama, how a band got its name, or favorite foods. My goal is to treat songwriters as writers, plain and simple. This is an intelligent conversation about the writing process between two writers. And today on the podcast, we have Eric D. Johnson of Fruit Bats. Of course, Johnson is also one third of the band Bonnie Light Horseman. I've interviewed another third of that band, Anais Mitchell. I think it was last year. I did an interview with Mitchell and Charlotte Cornfield, two fantastic musicians. But today we are talking to Johnson, who is, as I said, also, well, he is the sole permanent member of Fruit Bats. And Fruit Bats have a new album coming out April 14th on Merge Records called A River Running to Your Heart. You can pre-order that on the Fruit Bats website, fruitbatsmusic.com. A few notes on Johnson's process. He doesn't write every day. He writes when the mood strikes. The environment is not important at all. He can write anywhere. More on that later. But he does say that the good stuff goes down when he's staying up until 1 a.m. So back to that, the environment. He likes a messy environment, an unpredictable environment. And I'm the same way. I'm a prose writer, I don't write songs, but I've always said that I don't think I have any right knowing what the document is supposed to look like when I start. So I'd like to see where it takes me. I don't know what it's supposed to look like. I don't know how it's going to end. That's just me. I have an unstructured process. And he's the same way as a songwriter. He says that he calls himself a wrong hallway. He likes the wrong hallway style. He sees the song as a house, and that sometimes you have to walk into the wrong room to get to where you're going. And he likes to make those wrong turns, all these analogies. He says, the excitement is in the mistakes, right? And I love that, the unpredictability of the process, that you get to where you are, by making a series of mistakes, going down those wrong hallways, making those wrong turns. And as far as that physical environment, it's got to be a mess. He said that he always starts out clean, but by the end of the day, the physical room he's in is a disaster. Cables, papers, things everywhere. And I think he says that at some point he said that if the studio isn't a disaster, I probably didn't get much done. I don't write songs. I can't say that I have a messy place when I'm finished writing. But certainly, as I said, I am most effective when it's unpredictable. And again, his quote, the excitement is in the mistakes. I love that. That's great. So anyway, again, Eric D. Johnson of Fruit Bats, go to fruitbatsmusic.com. New album coming out on Merge Records, April 14th, called A River Running to Your Heart. And here is my interview with Eric D. Johnson of Fruit Bats. I always start by asking, are you an everyday writer or someone who just writes when the mood strikes? I mean, songwriters tend to be, Amy Ray, for example, told me 5 days a week, no more than 2 hours. That was like the specifics of it. But some songwriters just say, hey, I write when the mood strikes. And so where do you fall into that?
Write not every day. And yes, when the mood strikes, but also, if I have a album to make, it's not to say like I need homework or I'm a slave to the grind only or something like that. But I do enjoy, sort of parameters where it's like, I got to write 12 songs. And it's sort of, I always had sort of interest in film and novels and like longer things. So I've always sort of loved the notion of like the album as it's like songs should live together a little bit and be part of the same movie. So that's maybe why I do like the sort of saying like, I need to make an album now. So we live in such an era of like one-off songs and content and stuff like that. So, but I still sort of believe in that, that old fashioned, like writing an album thing.
So there are days, it sounds like, when if it's just not happening, you're fine with that. Like there's no anxiety behind that.
I was not prolific for the first, I don't know, 15 or so years of me being a songwriter and a recording artist. And it was partly because of the times, you know, like early 2000s was like still that sort of when I got started, it was like that pre-streaming era of it's not, it was like you would make a record and then you would have 2 years off, you know, or you would tour it and then your record label maybe in 2 years would be like, okay, now another one. And then you, so it was like the Olympics or something, you know, like you, and there certainly wasn't, you weren't like just churning stuff out. So, it was that. So then it was like, took me like 15 years. And then we kind of got into this era where you make albums more frequently. It's like, it's cool. It's like, there's bad parts to that too, but in a way it's like Beatles made 2 records a year or something like, so it's, I think it's A, I'm better at writing, like more comfortable. Like I can churn them out because it's not like it was a chore before, but, I'm better at it. I'm more confident in it. And we live in a time where you like have to more too.
Yeah. So,
yeah.
Well, I interviewed Shayna Cleveland a few weeks ago and she said, I mean, her quote, now she's got a kid. And so obviously when that happens, you know, your time is no longer your own. But she said, I think her quote was, all the time in the world is too much pressure. And I thought that was, it really struck me. Like when you have all that time, you know, it's like when I was a professor, my students would ask for extensions on papers. And I was like, that's fine. You're still going to start the day before anyway. Like, what does it really matter how much extra time I give you?
Yeah.
So for me, at least, I'm curious if, you know, if you ever have done this, but I will create a false deadline for myself. So a false deadline isn't, oh, you know, start writing for an hour, start the stopwatch. It's if I have something to do at 3, I won't start writing until like 2. Now, what I'm writing has nothing to do with that thing I'm doing at 3, but it's still a hard stop. And I know that about myself because I go to New York all the time for work. It's like a 2.5-hour train ride. And I'll get more done on that train in those 2.5 hours than if I sat here because I have to put my laptop away. So do you find that being under pressure, those kind of deadlines, it sounds like that's actually, you can really get a lot done rather than saying, oh, crap, I've got to get this done. It's kind of like, oh, you know.
I've been known to rock a false deadline. And often I have a real deadline too, you know. I love the idea of the train ride, which it's a thing I don't get to do as much, but I like any kind of forced sitting like that. I love I'm here. There's nothing else I could be doing right now. So, but I'm pretty disciplined. And I like to write songs. It's like what I do. So, I'm like, this is like my job. So yeah, I do it. I have a certain kind of Midwestern, thing that I think I was raised with. It's for better and worse is kind of like, it's a little bit like making donuts for me. You know, I taught this songwriting class, a few months ago. It was amazing for this place, School of Song. But I did say it's like, it's the Donut Factory meets like the magical unicorn universe. You know, it should be magic, but like, you know, I don't know how many people have brought up the Beatles Get Back documentary on this podcast.
A few times. Yeah, a few times.
It's just like when you watch that, the thing that struck me so much, and I've watched it like twice, is how banal the writing process is, in an awesome way where you're like, we think of the Beatles songs as brought by God or, you know, by dust from outer space or something. And it's like, no, it's like it was 4 guys in their late 20s, you know, messing around and trying to make something happen. So I sort of like that aspect to it. And then the magic is in there too, because songs are magic, you know?
Yeah. So you mentioned, you said discipline, and I don't hear many songwriters ever say the word discipline. I think, you know, I'm disciplined is not a sentence I hear from songwriters very often. It's typically like, oh yeah, I'm notoriously undisciplined. So do you set like a number of, you know, like writers say certain number of words, certain number of pages? When you say disciplined, is that where you can sit down for a long stretch of time and create?
I should say my version of discipline, you know, the version of discipline that I have developed for myself, which is to say, like, I don't know how I do it. I don't exactly know, because it's not, it's like it, everyone's going to have their own. I don't mean so much discipline, like how, you know, some kind of regimented thing, but a discipline as a noun, you know, like a discipline, a,
yeah.
Yeah. So, and for me, that's, I actually don't have a practice really at all. It's beyond sort of considering myself a collage type writer. I'm not, I don't have like a way that I do it.
Mm. So you said collage. So what do you mean by that exactly?
I'm usually like, I have over the years, I collect lines and bits of music and stuff like that, and they live as pieces, you know, and sometimes unexpectedly come together, or sometimes they get thought of at the same time, but I'll have like a line. But I have a, actually, like on the brand new record, there's a line that's actually the title of a song too, that has existed in a notebook for 23 years and never found a song and finally did. And it's kind of in a way like I wrote the song based on that line, but then the song kind of became about the moment that I thought of that line too. So it had sort of a special aspect to it too. But yeah, so it's like these lines and stuff are seeds of like the feeling of the song, you know?
So walk me through that, because first of all, when I look at anything I did 23 years ago, it's probably, oh my God, I can't believe I wrote that. Not, oh yeah, I need to find a place for that. So was that, did you have the, I mean, I'm, yeah, walk me through that. Was that something where you said you've been hanging on to that for 23 years, or were you looking through old notebooks? Like, how did that line come up exactly?
I'm certain I don't have that notebook anymore, but I weirdly remembered that one. And you're right. I made records 23 years ago and I don't really want to listen to them either as a person back then. So it's not like, but one line can be interesting and evocative, you know, like, and then it sort of had the weight of history and stuff behind it too. So yeah, it was like that one just, I think it kind of came out of the recesses of my memory.
Oh really? So it wasn't, you weren't leafing back through pages. It was, remembered it.
I don't think that page exists, but I remember that because, and there was a feeling attached to it as well. So, yeah. And then the song kind of almost became about the sort of memory of like coming up with that line. But so that's a more like huge example of that. But a lot of times, yeah, I have little bits of lyrics and just things that I find interesting that might just be words that sound cool or something like that. I find, you know, there's like mumble writing that people talk about, which is really great. And a lot of people, I feel like Jeff Tweedy is like the master of it, you know, and I know Tom Petty was like a writer who would just sit down and just like go from start to finish. And it was like this kind of exorcism or something, and came up with these. I feel that's maybe one method that doesn't work as well for me, because I get stuck on the mumble.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And but I've done it, like, and it's I've gotten songs out of it too, but I have the tendency to, I can write a really good mumble chorus that if it works, but I have to sort of extract the meaning from that and be like, what's the actual story on this? So
this is like, it's gotta be 12 years ago. I interviewed Jack Temption, and Jack Temption wrote a lot of songs for the Eagles.
Of course.
Peaceful, Easy Feeling and all that stuff. And he told me this great story, 'cause he made me think of this. When he and Glenn Frey would sit down and write together, they had that voice, that mumble voice, but they named it, they called it El Blurto. and they gave it a name. And when they gave it a name, it kind of made it more official. And that became a part of their process, where they would just, you know, blurt these words out, but it had a name.
Nice. El Blurto.
Blurto. No,
I admire anyone who can do a full on El Blurto. It's for me, it's like really only works for choruses.
Yeah. So as far as, let's talk about the organization of those words and phrases. First of all, is your phone just filled with like hundreds of voice memos?
Not hundreds, but like a good amount. Yeah. In fact, that just remind where I was like, oh yeah, I got to like go back and check some of those. But yeah, lots of voice memos and voice memos of music as well too, but or a little bit of both, and notebooks as well too. I still like a good old fashioned write something down in and also on the phone on the notes app and stuff too. So yeah, I'll throw them down anywhere I can.
So this is what causes me tremendous anxiety. So is there any on the voice memos or on the phone, is there any sense of organization? Like, do you name them or is it just going, oh my gosh, where is that thing I did 6 months ago? Is there any sense of, oh yeah, I'm going to name this or give it a title or something like that, so you can go back and find it later?
I don't name them. And the funny thing too, is like I'm in a new place now, but my old house, it was like it would name them like a geotag name, and clearly somebody had like a small business near me and it was called Johnson's Water Solutions. So it was always like Johnson's Water Solutions 23 or something was but I also am pretty I'm not doing it like 10 times a day either, so there's a pile of them, but it's an organizable pile.
What about that? What about those notebooks? Do you have all those old notebooks? Have you saved them?
Yeah. I have like pretty much every single one. They're in a storage space somewhere, but like, yes, there's a lot.
Amazing. So the big question is, are you now, when you write lyrics, are you a pen and paper person or a computer person?
Computer person, which is for better and worse, you know, and sometimes a pen and paper person, but I the only thing about computer that is really cool is just the like speed with which you can get your thoughts out faster while typing versus writing with pen and paper.
Yeah. So it's funny, you mentioned the collage thing. I want to come back to that because I interviewed Daniel Lanois a couple of years ago, and he said that he has all of his lyrics on 11 by 22 art paper, and there's like no linear process to that at all. It's like words in all corners and thought bubbles and arrows and lines and crossouts and stuff like that. And you know, I am kind of that way too. When I write, I'm not a linear writer at all. I just don't think when I start to write, I have any right knowing the direction it's going to take. Now that's just me. Like, I feel like I'd rather just see where that takes me rather than saying, here's what I'm going to write. So are you that way too with those lyrics? Are you a linear writer or nonlinear?
I'm not sure if this is either, but I am like a kind of a, I don't want to turn it into math or anything, but yeah. I'm slightly a structural writer because I've sort of come to like a good place where I'm like, I kind of start with like the pop structure as a verse, chorus, verse structure as at least just sort of like a jumping off point. So I usually am kind of like, when I get that kind of seed of a line, I can usually identify like, that seems like a chorus maybe, or maybe that's just part of a verse. Maybe that's a first line that sort of drops us off. So usually I start, I guess it is pretty linear what I do, because I start with, template sounds terrible. It's not a template, but with the sort of notion of, that I'm always kind of starting off by saying like, okay, we're going to do this is going to be 3 minutes long, and there's going to be verse, chorus, verse, and maybe there'll be like a bridge or a middle eight or something like that. And then sometimes also I will totally subvert that too. And I'm like with my song, The Pet Parade or something, where we were just like, let's just do two chords and have it be this kind of very astral weeks, free flowing thing, and kind of like freed my mind a little bit and came up with something I think pretty great with it. But, yeah, but like I think it's always starts off with a very non-linear Lanois-esque. Yeah, it is sort of like whether it's on one page or something, but yes, it is a tangled mess of seeds of ideas.
Do you revise a lot of your lyrics? Are you a heavy reviser, I guess?
I'm a medium reviser, and I wasn't for a long time. I feel like that's some of the not to bring the Beatles thing up again, but it was like when Paul's first singing the early things of the song Get Back.
Right.
We're just going like, he's doing this little like guitar lick. And I was like, George, don't do that. That doesn't sound good. And then I'm like, well, yeah, he didn't. Like, we know he didn't. It was like a band that preternaturally knew how to revise, you know, how to do the thing. Whereas just to be like, that was pretty good. But like, so I don't, that's like my criticism of myself in my younger years was like, I was more just kind of like finish line, you know? And now, I sort of respect the process a little bit more, but, and yeah, I don't want to go down too many wormholes too. We're just writing songs with Anais Mitchell for the past few years. She's an incredible reviser.
Yeah.
She's really like, no, I always say she's no line left behind. Like, so she'll kind of question things that like deserve to be questioned too, but she's kind of just like got the right, cause she's so skilled too, she asks the right questions. And, I've learned a lot from her in that regard. But also I'm a very like feely kind of like, I like to take big swings and sort of believe in them too. So it's a little dance between both of those things.
So when you didn't revise earlier, was it an impatience, the youthful impatience, or was it, yeah, I don't want to mess with this because that's the first thing that came out and that's what's meant to be?
It was youthful impatience. I wish that I could say that I was, and I think I struck a couple of little small nuggets of gold there sometimes with things, but yeah, I was a bad student, you know, like, and it was just like, I didn't want to do my homework. I didn't want to like, finish the test. I would get like, you know, lazy. And you know, this was like still indie rock times and stuff. I was still finding my actual voice as like a really as a singer too, but also as a writer and being able to like tap into feelings rather than just, you know, it was a little back then. It was like a little more, I was just trying to create a vibe. So, so I was kind of like lyrics were going to be good enough, you know? And now I'm sort of like, no, I got to think about this a little bit more. What am I saying here? Like, yeah, I always say I'm less interested in being understood now that I'm older, but I'm better at being understood. So it's a paradox, but a good one.
So when you revise, then are you like, I've had songwriters tell me they'll, you know, sing a line three different times, but they'll replace one word with two other choices and sing that line that way with each word, you know, different. So are you revising, when you revise the lyrics, typically what are you doing? Are you kind of tightening it? Are you replacing words? Is there a general thing that you're doing when you revise?
It can certainly be something as simple as like a word level replacement. That happens. That I find for me, that often happens like right before I sing it. Like when I'm at, that's like, I do a lot of in studio writing, like where you're like revising. Cause like, you know, I am a studio as a writing tool writer as well for the most part. So I'm not, I always say I wish I could be the like sit down with the acoustic guitar and just kind of like do something, but I sort of need to, I need to let my demoing process is also my writing process. And it usually kind of like bleeds into the recording process too. So it's all kind of one thing. So when I'm recording an album, I'm still kind of writing it to some extent because the music starts to inform like what the story of the song is. So there's been many times where I'm changing a line on the fly, you know, like in the vocal booth. But yeah, no, I mean, revising can be mean all kinds of things too. It's but like, you know, for me, it's like it could be the most oblique lyrics of all time, but they still need to mean something like in the background, either to me or that someone can sort of take something from them too and make it mean something.
So with your process, it sounds like you're pretty flexible. For me, environment is important. Like this is my desk and I do work related stuff here, but I'll never write here because I associate it with one thing and I don't want to associate the creative part with that too. So, you know, like I never write here, but I might write downstairs, but I revise in that chair behind me. So I'm big, like separating those things is very important to me. But I know that about myself. Like, I know I'm a morning person, not a night person, certain rooms, certain type of day, certain time of day, things I have to have with me. But I guess the one thing for me is I just don't want, you know, I don't want to create in the same place that I am doing, you know, work related stuff. So how important is environment to you as far as maybe room, time of day, maybe things you have to have with you? Is that important or not at all?
Environment's not important at all. I'll write anywhere. And also I have a very small place. So it's my workspace and my creative space has to be next to each other because it's a tiny place. But it's I am a morning person. And kind of the nuts and bolts of music can often happen like very early in the morning. The good stuff, and I'm a kind of an early to bed person, but I know the good stuff is going down when I'm staying up till 1 a.m. Like that's when the real good stuff happens. So when I get into a real tear of writing, it's like the hour kind of means nothing. But if I'm in the early process of like, let's get some things going, it's a morning thing for sure. And then it just gets wild after that.
But do you like, and that's good, you know that. Like, I think it's important to know that about yourself or myself as a writer, because I know it works. Like, I just know what works and what doesn't. But do you think that's important to have a sense of that, to have that awareness of what works for you and when you're most efficient, like to be consciously aware of that?
Yeah. And that's usually morning first, but like with everything I do, it's always about kind of like setting up a structure. And then I always say, like, when my little studio room, you know, I have to have it very neat, like when I start, but you know that things are happening when it's an absolute disaster, when there's instruments all over the place and mic cables all over the place, you're like, that's when the good stuff's getting done. So yeah, it's about sort of starting off with that clean structure, but then making a mess, you know?
It's so funny you say that, because now that I'm thinking about it, the songwriters have told me that things have to be spotless before they start. Like Sylvan Esso, a couple of years ago, Nick told me that I think that there has to be a cleaning session right before they create. There's, for whatever it is, it's got to be clean. But I think that's so interesting, like the rituals, right?
Yeah. That's one of Brian Eno's oblique strategy cards, says when in doubt, tidy, which is one of my favorite ones. Also, it's honor thy mistake as a hidden intention is another.
I like that.
Tidy first and then make an absolute mess. Like, but if you're not, for me, if I'm not making a mess event, if the studio is not a disaster by the end of the day, I maybe didn't get too much done.
See, I like that the tidy first, that used to be called procrastination.
Well, it is for me sometimes.
Yeah.
I need to clean the whole house before I write this song.
But okay. But when you say that the place is a mess, I mean, you are just stuff falls all over the place by the end of the day, papers, cables, just can't even walk anywhere.
Yep, exactly. Because my writing process is a little bit tends to be studio dependent too. And like, you know, just getting sounds So it's usually, and that always happens when you're recording, because it's just like lots of cables, lots of instruments, and I'm in a tiny little room.
So I have a quote I want to read you, because we're talking about kind of tidying. And I love reading quotes by writers to songwriters. So this is Agatha Christie said, "The best time to plan a book is when you're doing the dishes." And I think that speaks to this idea, at least when I read that, it speaks to that idea of ideas coming to us when we're doing the mundane activities.
Yeah.
We talked about cleaning, but I've heard mowing the lawn, gardening, chopping vegetables, you know, all that stuff. There's something swimming. There's something about doing that mundane activity that requires no brain power that allows the creativity to kind of come to the, you know, bubble up to the top. So do you get a lot of ideas doing mundane activities? Like when you're not thinking about the song ideas?
I mean, there's mundane activities, maybe less so for me, but I know Andy, my good friend Andy Kabick from the band Vetiver, with whom we are always kind of have a brain trust together, and always writing while walking. That's like he'll write like a whole album. Like he has to like take a big long walk, you know, to make that happen. There's also kind of like, yeah, even beyond the mundane thing, there's always the like shower thoughts kind of theory, which is like when you are restricted and you can't write things down or something. So that's a little mundane activities, less so for me than that kind of, but the definitely like the shower thoughts kind of thing is great. And also driving, which has, because of the, and I'm very safe, but like because of the voice memo, you know, you can kind of just like hit the voice memo and get something going. But like when I've written a lot of songs on like long drives, even just, and beyond voice memo, just kind of like getting things in your head and like hitting the record button in your brain and remembering it when you stop for gas or something.
Is the driving, do you think, I guess there's a lot of reasons. It could be you're actually seeing things as you're driving that reminds you of something, or it could be the fact that, like we were saying, there's nothing else to do except create, or maybe just the motion. Cause I do hear trains, planes, automobiles, you know, all that kind of stuff. So why do you think driving is, why are those ideas happening when you're driving?
I mean, it's an evocative thing. I think for those reasons you said, it's just like the motion, there's something very like cinematic and romantic about like watching the world go by. Yeah, I think it's gotta be as simple as that. And the combination of the like shower thought thing, especially if you're on a solo drive. But I also like, I get sick of listening to music and podcasts if I'm on a really long drive. I've done so many drives between LA and Portland, which are kind of like been my two hometowns for the past 20 years or so, or maybe a little less, 15 years or so. So just tons of driving between those cities, and that it's a long, really long drive. And yeah, I've written a lot of songs on I-5 somewhere between Reading and Medford or something, you know, just driving, getting sick of music.
But it's probably because you know that drive. I mean, if you drove from LA to, I don't know, someplace you've never driven, that's not going to happen, I would imagine, because you're actually have to pay attention to what you're doing. So I think it is that kind of, when you can, at least, I don't know, my thought is it's because you don't have to focus on the task at hand, that's when that happens, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I know every gas station on that drive, and yeah.
Yeah. So what about walking? You mentioned that people, you know, can write songs on walks. And so does it ever happen to you walking, hiking, anything like that? Exercise, is this, you know, does that stimulate ideas for you?
Yeah. Every now and again. And in fact, I actually found a really old voice memo of me, right? And like had kind of forgotten where the seeds of that song came from. And I was on a walk, I could tell. I was walking up a really steep staircase too. So I was like huffing and puffing, but came up with this. So I was like exercising and walking and writing a song at the same time. And I was like, oh yeah, I forgot that one was written on an incredibly steep staircase.
And I have heard that when songs come to songwriters, when they're hiking or doing something like that, that the songs, the beat of the song, they realize later actually, mimics the cadence of the walk.
It very well could. Yeah. And I'm highly attuned to like tempo when I'm writing too, which is again, kind of part of my studio thing, but it's like, for me, it's about just the words, you know, like, how are they going to be heard? Like, how do you spit them out and how do they relate to the rhythm? You know?
So here's another quote by Allen Ginsberg, the poet: to gain your own voice, you have to forget about having it heard. And I think that speaks to like not being self-conscious.
Yeah.
So as a songwriter, how important is that to just forget about hearing your voice as you're creating, if that makes sense?
I mean, well, that's a great question and a great quote. Again, it plays into a little bit my more recent thoughts of like, I don't need to be understood anymore, but I'm better at making myself understood. But early on, I came from like this indie rock ethos, like a 90s indie rock ethos, where the stakes were really low. I just never thought about this as like a, it was kind of a calling, but not like where I was like, I'm going to become a huge star or something like that. And again, there was maybe some Midwestiness in there that was very like, I'm just like a painfully low key person, but also indie rock was like, it was a small stakes thing that it was like, you know, it was a, there was a much smaller audience for that. And it was just kind of like, yeah, you didn't necessarily plan on being heard. So I think I was very much doing it for myself and my friends, like when I started, which I think is probably a good way to start in a way. And then I was lucky enough that the sort of things changed for indie rock around 2004 or whatever. And it became something you could do for a living, you know? Mm-hmm. But so I think starting off that way was probably good for me. And then just developing myself too. So yeah, but now I will say all that said, I am trying to connect like with a listener too. Like I really want to, I enjoy that. I think about the live performance, you know, like when I'm singing, I'm like, how am I going to like perform this and like explain this to someone? I sort of want to like laser beam at the listener too. But yeah, I wasn't always that way. And I could still kind of tap into the, it can be totally be a tree falling in the woods too, if it has to be.
All right, one more author quote. This is my favorite. This is by E.L. Doctorow, the novelist. Writing is like driving at night. You can only see as far as the headlights, but you can make the whole trip that way.
Yeah, wow. Can you read that again?
I'm going to. I know. I have to repeat that to every songwriter because they're wow, that's amazing. Yeah. E.L. Doctorow, the novelist. Writing is like driving at night. You can only see as far as the headlights, but you can make the whole trip that way.
Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting. Like, because what are our headlights? It's a great quote. Like, it's a deep one.
I know, isn't it? But I think it's what I was talking about earlier. That, you know, how important is it to know what the final product is supposed to look like, rather than just kind of being spontaneous?
I am not a, I'm not like a Brian Wilson, you know, tape recorder in the brain sort of person where you're like, you hear it and then you got to get like, you know, you hear it fully formed in your brain and then you got to get to that place in your brain externally. And it needs to sound exactly like it did in your brain. I am I refer to it as the wrong hallway, style, which is like, and I taught this in my class too, but it's like your song is a big house that you're wandering around in and you need to like get to some room, but you may be like, you have to walk into the wrong room sometimes and be like, oh wait, this is really like where I'm supposed to be. So, yeah, my process is very meandering. But that said, I think there's process writers too, who are like, for them, it never ends, you know? And that can be obviously hamstringing because of the and then there's kind of product writers, which I sort of was early on. That was why I'm like, was like I was saying, I sort of would put out a song that's just like kind of not done, but where I was like, here it is, you know. So yeah, I'm a wrong hallways person. I like the process and I like to sort of make wrong turns to eventually get to the product. And then it's always the eternal question is, how do you know it's when it's done? And that just takes practice kind of, or it just takes a leap of faith to just be like, it's done. Cause it has to be.
Did you make up the wrong hallways analogy? I love that. That's amazing.
Yeah. That's my own.
That's very cool. That's such a perfect analogy, you know? Yeah. Oh, not this room. It's the other one. I love that.
Yeah. Yeah. And then that's where the excitement is for me, where you just like, I actually am not attracted to the tape recorder in the brain thing is like, really incredible. Like, and you get these art, I imagine like Stevie Wonder is probably like that, or someone like Judy Sill. But A, I can't do that. And B, the excitement for me is like the mistakes, you know, the happy accidents.
Yeah. A couple more questions. So Ernest Hemingway also famously the writers at least said he can never write about Paris when he was in Paris. He needed distance from that thing to be able to write about it. So whether that's a place, an emotion, or event, does that resonate with you? Is immediacy the key to writing about something, or is distance better?
Distance really helps. And I write a lot of geography too, and it always tends to be one about, like, I would never write a Chicago song in Chicago. And I've written a lot of those because that's my sort of original hometown, really where I kind of like got my start. But that's a great one. Yeah, I would never write about Paris in Paris. But I would write about Paris after coming back from Paris, maybe.
Right. What about distance? I mean, sorry, emotions. Do you need distance from that emotion to be able to write about it?
Or maybe a little bit of distance, or a little bit of time, but not so much time that that I'm tapped out of the actual kind of like heavy feeling of that emotion.
And that's it for the latest episode of Songwriters on Process. Don't forget, you can find all of my interviews with over 200 songwriters on my Songwriters on Process website at songwritersonprocess.com, going all the way back to 2010. You can read them, watch them, or listen to them. So until next time, thanks for listening.